Okay, today we are doing our sixth session, dealing with difficulties in our eight-part session. And today we have quite a bit to go through. And I have to end on time, so I want to make sure that happens. I'm hoping that you can see the screen and that you can hear what I'm saying. So if somebody could type in that they can hear, I'd sure appreciate it. Okay, nobody's typing. So I'm wondering if there's a problem. Oh, great. Okay, thank you. Terrific. Okay, so today we're dealing with difficulties. Last week we talked about secrets for inner happiness, but I want to jump back to a week ago when we were talking about leaving our past difficulties behind, leaving our past behind. This week I want to talk about dealing with difficulties that are mostly outside of us. Of course it has to do with the insides of us also, but I'm dealing with the difficulties that surround us. So, let me move this over here so I can see better. Great. So we left off last time talking about this really emunah exercise. Somebody said it's kind of like yoga, which it is sort of. So I just want to review this and then we're going to go further. That there is a concept here of acceptance and of trust of Hashem, of embracing the difficulty that we're facing, and then trusting Hashem even more after that. Getting to a place of appreciating the difficulty that we're facing, asking for help to deal with it, expanding ourselves to try to hold what we need so that we can deal with the difficulty, integrate it into ourselves, and then step forward into a new self, and repeat. Do it again. Become bigger again and again and again. So I'll just share with you that this week for me, I'm going to be facing a stretch because my father's coming to visit and he's not somebody that I've had much of a relationship with. And actually, he's coming right after this. I have to go to the airport. It's actually a big stretch because he did not show up after my son's death in May. It was just 6 months ago. He didn't come to visit and he didn't call. He didn't write or email till 2 weeks afterwards, and he wasn't really there pretty much at all. So, and that's kind of emblematic of the whole relationship over the years. It's been nice face-to-face, and it's been very distant when it's distant, that distant that when I lost a child, he didn't bother to come or call. So, so I'm going to be going through my own personal stretch, and we discussed last time the concepts of forgiving and forgetting, and so I'm going to be working on that, and I just want to say, in terms of the last screen, well, let me just look at this here. So accepting that this is the family that I was born into, trusting that Hashem knows what he's doing and had me be born into this family with these parents. Embracing the difficulty and realizing, okay, Hashem gave me this so I could actually move towards it, even though I don't feel like it, but I could move towards it. And trust Hashem even more. And now understand that as I trust Hashem, he loves me and he only sets up difficult situations for me to grow through. And so I can actually appreciate this and see, I want this experience. As much as I don't want it, I do want it. I'm going to move forward because there's something in it for me to grow here, to make a Kiddush Hashem that's personal and national, right? Personal growth and national Kiddush Hashem, Bezrat Hashem. So I appreciate it, and I don't think I can do it on my own. So for sure I request help, right? Just Ana Hashem Hoshiana, Ana Hashem Hatzlichana. Please, Hashem, help me and make me successful in these few days that I'll be spending with my father. And then expand myself to be able to deal with him in a genuine way, to represent the Jewish people in a genuine way, to navigate my family and everybody else's reactions in a compassionate and kind way, and then expand myself to be able to accomplish that, and then integrate it into myself, and then hopefully I'll be able to step forward into a new self that's going to be different next week than I am right now because I've gone through this experience. And then I repeat again and repeat again. That's the way that we grow. So I'll be working on some forgiving and some forgetting, some allowing him to be who he is and forgiving him for mistakes that he's made, allowing me to be who I am, allowing different family members to be who they are in this, and try to figure it out. what's really important is to recognize it's always our choice how we deal with what we're presented with. It's not always our choice what we're presented with, but how we deal with it is always up to us, given sanity, of course. But basically, that's always within our realm, is how we choose to behave, how we choose to deal with, how we choose to process in our inner selves when we're dealing with things. So I'd just like to know who here would just like to share a big piece that they're dealing with, a chunk, so that I can have it in mind as we continue. Is there anybody that would like to share something outside of them that's not, that may have to do with their inner working and dealing with it, always interfaces, but it's not something that's their, I feel like the last time we talked about things that are almost our fault, bad choices that we made, that we have to now struggle out of or figure out. But these are outside things, not necessarily things that we brought upon ourselves, but that Hashem brought us to work with. Would anybody like to share anything? You can, let's see. Wow. So somebody's sharing she was just diagnosed with breast cancer and she has surgery next Tuesday, Refuah Shleima. And you can, let's be in touch, but I hope that everything goes well. And that's a huge challenge. It really is. How do you face that? How do you face a health challenge, certain physical pain, definite emotional pain, family pain and stress? There are certainly challenges there. So let's look with that as we go forward. Okay, one of the tools that I use, and I put here some horses for nightmares. One of the tools that I use for getting through things is trying to imagine what's the worst that it could be. Really the worst. So there could be terrible things. And in the end, we're still in Hashem's hands. And Hashem still loves us and we're still souls in the end. So what's the worst that could happen? Let's say somebody, not the person who was just diagnosed, but somebody else who's diagnosed with something terrible, the worst that can happen is that they're going to die. And worse, that they could die an uncomfortable or painful death. That's the worst that can happen. So what happens if that happens? Sometimes it's good to just think into that. What's the worst that can happen? And then just think past that. So after I die, I'm still going to be a soul, still in Hashem's hands. And I have an eternal relationship with Hashem. There may be pain in the process between here and there, but everybody's going to cross over at some point, somehow, either comfortably or uncomfortably, abruptly or over the long term. But all of us are headed towards that end. And hopefully, if we've done what we need to do here appropriately, we're headed towards a good relationship with Hashem for eternity. So I find it helpful. That's a very big example. Let's just say a small example, right? You can't find your wallet and you're leaving the house. So you might be stressing and you could think, what's the worst that can happen? I'll need to buy something and I'm not going to have money. I'll get stopped by the police and I won't have my license, right? So what's the worst that can happen then? Oh, I'll get a ticket and I'm going to have to bring my license to the courthouse. Can I handle that? I can handle that. Okay, I could run out of the house without my wallet. You're facing a bad grade or a bad test, whatever it is. So can you handle getting an F? What's the worst that can happen? An F. You didn't study enough. You get an F. What's the worst that can happen? You'll have to repeat it. You'll have to go to summer school. You'll have to take an extra semester to graduate. Those are all things you'd rather not do. But could you do it? Yeah, you could. So for me, I find it helpful to actually play nightmares out and see what's the worst that could happen. There are bad things that can happen. Turns out the Jewish people have been through a lot. And hopefully we don't have a lot more to go through, but we have been through a lot, and we can handle a lot. So we collectively can handle a lot, which means that each one of us individually can handle a lot. We're going to get to that a little bit more today. Okay, I want to tell you the story of my son-in-law, Yehoshua, who had a terrible accident and ended up in a wheelchair, probably for life. Derech HaTeva, according to nature, he's in a wheelchair for life. Hopefully there will be miracles and medical science will advance and Hashem will allow doctors to have insights that they haven't yet had and things will be changed. However, he was in an accident that crushed his spinal cord and he's now quadriplegic. So what's the worst that can happen, right? You have an accident. He was a camp counselor for an Orthodox wilderness boys camp, driving a 15-passenger van, hauling four canoes and a kayak and whatever else in the trailer behind him. And he lost control on the road, tried to regain control, overcorrected, and rolled the whole van and trailer down the hill into a ravine. Pretty much everybody was injured. One camper, unfortunately, did not make it, was Nifter, passed away. And he crushed his spinal cord. It wasn't clear the extent of his injuries when he first got his injuries, but it was clear that he was very injured. He was airlifted to a hospital in Maine, and they had to figure out what's going to be. Is he going to live or is he going to die? So that's how I met him, basically. I think I had met him once before, just in passing, in a ski lodge in his younger days. Somebody waved and said, "Hey, I'm Ari Hoffman's younger brother." But that's how I met him, was in his wheelchair. So you could think, that's a pretty bad thing to happen, right? To be somebody who loves the wilderness, loves to hike and climb and ski, and has gone to Alaska and has gone to the Colorado mountains and has kayaks and rope climbs and leads a camp in it and wants to do that maybe professionally, lead, bring Orthodox youth into the wilderness, contact with the wilderness, growing the power that comes through coming into contact with nature and strengthening your own self against it and spiritual lessons through that. It's pretty bad if that's your goal, that you land up in a wheelchair and you can no longer, forget hiking, climbing, driving. You can't walk. You can't even move the bottom half of your body at all. So what do you do with difficulties like that? How do you handle it? So really, each person is in choice. Some people can become extremely bitter and never really recover. They can spend a life of needing to be taken care of and resenting it and being angry with God and angry with those people around them and hating themselves for making the mistake that caused the accident. But really, if you can understand what it is a gift package in barbed wire wrapping paper that you have to delicately unwrap to learn who you are and who you can be. And that's exactly what he did. Here is a picture of Yoshua. I just want to look at this additional note that came in. So here's another difficulty that somebody is facing. My husband's been replaced at work, and he's reevaluating every decision he has made in his life, including marrying me. He says he isn't going anywhere. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. It's actually quite a painful time. I wish I would know your age. Maybe you could type in your age. I'll just tell you that for many families, for many individuals, life reevaluation for men comes at big job change or retirement. So that's usually late 50s, early 60s for men. So you're 48. Is he 48? You're 48? Or I'm assuming you're close to that age. For women, it's right about that age, right? For women, it's right about 48 when they're empty nesting. It's a big life change time. It's a time to really look at oneself and to think about who you are in the face of the new freedom that you have with your children mostly raised. And for men, it usually has to do with career changes. So this is an involuntary career change. But it's definitely a time of evaluation. This time in life is a real time of assessment and evaluation. And it can be extremely painful. And it's a lot of work for the wife to carry a husband who's in, it's a lot of work for any spouse, let's put it that way, any spouse or partner to carry somebody who's in, to carry their partner who's in big transition mode, to deal with their own personal feelings towards that person, and then to try to create the space for that person to have the room that they need to gracefully transition without having to face the sometimes anger, disappointment, bitterness, or sadness that the person who is opposite them in the relationship is holding towards that. I'm finding that, I'll just go personal again, so, you know, my husband right now is saying Kaddish for both our son and his father. So he's really stretched between those two places of mourning, having lost the ceiling off of his life with his father passing away, and having lost a piece of his future with his son passing away, plus a loving relationship with both of them. And it's very hard for him right now to carry those two losses. And I'm carrying him. He carries himself a little bit. It's my job to carry him and create space for him to live in and try to hold him gently while he goes through this process. So I would encourage you, I'm sure you have your own issues about what's going on for your husband, and the more you can expand yourself to hold him gently while he goes through his process, the smoother the process can be for both of you. Let's get back to our story a little bit, just so maybe you could get some insight and inspiration from this, because these are really, it works out so nicely that it's this week's Parsha to be able to tell these stories. Let's see. Here's one more. Okay, so here's somebody who's remembering Yehoshua when she actually came to Denver and met him. So here is Yehoshua. He's holding his twin baby. This is the day that she came out of the NICU and came home from the hospital. It actually took I'm not going to tell you the whole story of how he became my son-in-law, but he had his accident before he married my daughter. It's a long story, but I introduced them. You can, if you want to hear the whole story, or whatever version I call the whole story, it's on my website. I have a whole page for Elisheva and Yehoshua, so you can see some pictures and you can hear the story, and you can go to his website if you're interested in more. But I just, for the purposes of this, I'm just going to tell this story. So here's Yehoshua, the day that he brought his baby home from the hospital. They waited 4.5 years to conceive and finally had twin girls. Unfortunately, one of them didn't make it. It was right actually around this time of the year last year. They were born November 6th, and she lived for 12 days. I'm just trying to think what's today. It's not quite yet. She doesn't have a yahrzeit because she was under a month old, so it's not something that we mark. But of course, emotionally, we mark it. We just don't mark it Jewishly. So, but this is the day that he brought his healthy twin home, and I commented to him as he wheeled her out of the hospital. Elisheva went to get the car, and he was able to carry her on his lap. I walked out with him, and I just said, you know, I thought about it. I said, you weren't able to carry your bride over the threshold, but you are able to carry your daughter over the threshold. So here he is, happy being able to do that. And think about the obstacles that he surmounted. He's an amazing person. So he faced his own death, certainly the death of who he was, no question about it. I mean, it was touch and go right after the accident, if he would live or die, but certainly after they discovered that he would live and that Baruch Hashem, his brain was fully intact, but that his body was significantly compromised, he had to face the death of the life of the life that he had and the life that he thought he would have, and create something new out of who he actually was. Okay, so for this, I want to tell you a story from this week's Parsha. So it was actually in this week's Parsha, 6 years ago, that I spent the second Shabbos with Yehoshua. After his accident, his parents needed, he had a 100-day stay in Craig Hospital here in Denver, and his parents needed some breaks, so different people spent Shabbases with them. So I spent a Shabbos with him during this week's Parsha, and this week's Parsha is Vayishlach. In this week's Parsha is the story of the Gid Hanasha, is the story of the sciatic nerve, the struggle between the angel and Jacob. Let's look at Jacob for a few minutes, Yaakov. So Yaakov in this week's Parsha, there's nobody who had actually more tzuris than Yaakov, if you think about what he went through. Being tricked, I mean, having the difficulty with Esav, and having the, as a child, and then switching the brachas, and having being chased and to be killed, and then going to Laban's house and dealing with a difficult father-in-law. I mean, a very difficult father-in-law. Having the two brides, having them switched, dealing with, and then having his beloved wife die just before he goes into Israel, and then having his son, missing his son for so long, thinking that he's dead, but not being able to put him to rest because he actually wasn't dead. I mean, just one thing after another, after another, after another, right? Yosef was, what's the right word? Was he kidnapped? The whole Yosef story happened right after he goes into Israel, and it says Yaakov Bikesh Leshev Bashalva, right? He was hoping to sit in peace a little bit. He had had such a difficult life already, and he just got into Eretz Yisrael and he's thinking, oh, a little rest, please. And it turns out, no, we're not born to rest here. Rest is for the next world, and this world is for working. And right after that, that's when the whole story with Yosef happens, and it leads him down a whole other roller coaster in his life. So, and after he comes out with Lavan and his whole entire family, that he finally made this family, finally got these two, got the wives and got the children all born, and excuse me, and had everything happening for him, was working, and he extricates himself from Laban's household, and he's headed out towards the promised land with his family to start a new life, he has to encounter Esav again. And there's this whole battle with Esav, the struggle that he has with the angel of Esav and what's going on there. It's a fascinating battle, and Rabbi Sacks has something to say about it, which we'll get to. But for now, I just want to talk about what happened from the battle. And that's what Rav Hirsch says, right? So what happened from it is that they struggled until the morning, and then the angel injured Yaakov inside his thigh, and Yaakov forever limps after that. And because of that, we don't eat the Gid Hanasha, the sciatic nerve, until this very day. Until this very day means not until the very day that this book was written, but until the very day that this reader is reading that book, which means till today, right? So forever we don't eat it. Why not? So Rav Hirsch asks, why not? Could it be? It couldn't be, he says, that we don't eat that nerve to commemorate the struggle between one of our avos and an angel. It can't be that that fight has such an impact on us. It has to be what the fight was about. So he explains what the fight was about. And if anybody wants to see this, it's a fascinating Rav Hirsch, absolutely worthwhile reading. It's on, on Pasuk 33 in chapter 32 of Bereishit of Genesis. So it's quite a long essay. But what he says is that basically Yaakov limps forward into history in order to teach us that Esav injured him in his physical capacity so that the stability of the Jew was now forever a question. That the physical stability of the Jew is not what keeps the Jew alive in the world. In fact, it's compromised forever. Jews are weaker and have been throughout history. Let's leave aside right today and see what's the story of the IDF for having the State of Israel. It's a little bit of a challenge to the stereotype of the underdog weakling Jew. But certainly anybody who remembers Woody Allen's early movies, you know, just that stereotypical, weaker, pasty-faced glasses Jew. And I'm not saying it has to be that, but I'm just saying that throughout history, it has been that we have been physically weaker, that physical strength is not our main point. And that was part of what was going on. And this struggle was a dual struggle, a struggle of what's my identity? What do I bring to the world? Who am I? Esav, as you know, was done in a finished product that when he was born. That was his name, Esav, finished. Asui means finished. But Yaakov struggled with that, right? He struggled with his own identity. And Rabbi Sacks says, actually what this fight was Yaakov struggling with his self so much that he wanted to be Esav. That's why he stole his bracha. That's why he did different things to try. That's why he struggled with him all these years, is because actually that's why he held on to his heel. He wanted that prominence. He wanted to be firstborn. He wanted to have that position in the family. And it even came down to stealing the blessing of the firstborn. So it's, it really comes from a desire, according to Rabbi Sacks, to actually be Esav. And what he had to do in this struggle was come to terms with being himself and throw off the angel of Esav, off of him, cast off his desire to be that and move into his ability to be his own self. But in that, we had to learn who we Jews, it's a precursor for all of us, we had to learn who we actually are. And who we actually are is not physically strong. Our strength does not lie in our legs, the stability of our legs. So Rav Hirsch says that, I wish I could find the exact, yeah, after all this, the meaning of the prohibition cannot be doubted. The spirit of Esav will not be able to conquer Jacob, nor throw him down throughout the whole fight against him during the long ages of darkness on earth, but will be able to hamstring him, to prevent him standing firmly on both feet. Without a firm stand and walk does Jacob go through history. And this lack of stability is a necessary factor, ultimately, to open Esav's eyes. I think that's what it's important to focus on that sentence, because Yaakov is the precursor to all of us and all Jews, right? So the lack of stability that we have in our lives, the difficult things that are thrown our way, are important to open Esav's eyes. They're important to open our own eyes as well. But let's hear what Rav Hirsch says. Did Jacob stand like Esav at the head of his 400 warriors? The fact that he cannot be conquered would never show the finger of God in history. Therefore, the descendants of Jacob too, who just through their material weakness and in it are to be Israel, the sign of the soul conquering power God, are not to eat this tendon of submission. So the idea here is that we have to be weaker, we have to be conquered and survive. So not fully conquered, but we have to be cast about through history as a people. It wouldn't show the finger of God in our fate if every nation embraced us and we always had it good. It only works if we have a difficult life and we still survive. So that's collectively, nationally, you can see that now looking back over history, how much we've been through, how much we've grown through that, and the miraculous nature of our existence because of the survival of all the difficult things that we've gone through. It's only because we've gone through so much that it's so clear that it's a miracle that we exist today. But for our own selves too, it's only by going through so much that we actually come into who we are. Who are we called? Who are we named after? We're not named after Avraham, who also had some tests, and we're not named after Yitzhak. Collectively, we are named after Yaakov. We're the children of Israel. Yaakov and Israel, the same name. So what Rav Hirsch says here is that the Jew needs to remember, the reason why we don't eat that vein is to remember that we're not physically strong. What we bring is our heart and our mind to the world, our intellect and our neshama. That's our gift to the world. So here's a picture of Yehoshua with his daughter in his lap learning Torah. Right? So because what he has to give is his mind and his neshama. He doesn't have a physical body. Yeah, he does have a physical body, Baruch Hashem, but he doesn't have the physical strength. There's so much he can't do because of his quadriplegia, but there's so much he can do because he has an intact soul and an intact mind. Here's just a picture to show how you see in the bottom picture, really in the top picture first, and she's younger, but that's his daughter Ahuva, who is learning to play with his wheelchair and enjoys making it go. She hasn't yet learned the directions, but she knows that's the button to make it go. And you can see her on the bottom as she's gotten a little older with her eyes looking up at him. How am I going to climb this mountain? I can certainly get there if I try, and I want to be in his lap and I want to play with that joystick. So, but it is that's what makes us stronger, is having those kinds of things moving us forward. Okay, here's Yaakov, right? Yaakov, who had so much tsar in his life, and one thing after another, and that's what we are called. We're called the B'nai Yisrael, the B'nai Yaakov, not the B'nai Avraham, not the B'nai Yitzhak, but the B'nai Yaakov, because it is through tsar that we grow and through tsar that we shine. And the resilience that he had is tremendous. So it's really not all the tsaris that you go through, but all the tsaris that you come out of, meaning what you get from that, that makes you into the person that you can be. And it's difficult to hear, but it's absolutely true that the difficulties that we have are lovingly given to us by Hashem. Whether it's physical challenges, a physical health problem, a heart diagnosis, or something that we live with chronically, asthma or depression or or diabetes, or whether it's something outside of us, but that still gives us difficulty, a difficult neighborhood, a difficult century, difficult financial circumstances, whatever it is, Hashem arranged it for us on purpose. So we could be mad at Hashem, and that's appropriate if you want to be. You could be very angry, and at some point, hopefully, you can get to a place where you can say thank you. Thank you for giving me this. I really appreciate it, because I know you gave it to me lovingly so that I can grow through this. I try to practice that with smaller things. Start with not being able to find a parking place when you're late. right? Say, thank you, Hashem, for giving me this difficulty of not being able to find a parking place. If you can practice it in smaller things like that, you can try to expand that or strengthen your muscles for recognizing Hashem gave you this, and it's worthwhile because he gave it to you, and therefore it's worth it to be thankful for that. Not easy, but possible to get there. Okay, so it's really the resilience. It's really what we get out of this. I saw a nice sign once that said, it's not how far we fall, but how high we bounce that matters. So I liked that, just to think about what are some of the challenges that we face, and sometimes we fall very far, or sometimes we're thrown very far. And it's not how low we go, but rather how high we bounce that matters. Now, just taking that analogy a little further, what allows something to bounce, right? If it's not filled, it's not going to bounce. So you take a ball like that we see in the picture, it's not going to bounce very high if it's not filled with air. It'll just splat on the ground if it's more empty. So we do need to fill ourselves. The way to have that resilience is to fill ourselves as much as we can with whatever connections with Hashem, with others, with ourself that we can, so that we end with learning, so that we really have something inside of us that keeps us full, so that when we do get slammed down to the ground, there's what to bounce back with. But it is the resilience. It's interesting, Rabbi Sacks has a little story. When he first was, when he first became chief rabbi, he had to have a medical examination and he had to run on a treadmill. So he asked the doctor, what are you measuring? Are you measuring how fast my heart rate gets or how quickly I'll get tired? And the doctor said, neither one. I'm going to measure how quickly your heart rate comes back to resting heart rate after you get off. So what he was measuring was resilience, recovery. How well do we recover from stress? And that really is the measure of the man, the measure of the person, the measure of the nation. What's our response? When we get bombed, do we say, okay, that's it. I'm never going downtown again. I'm never going to have another slice of pizza again. Rehov Yafo is now going to be a desolate zone. No, we don't. We bounce back and we recover. We rebuild and we keep going. So that is really the measure of who we are. What kind of resilience do we have? How can we grow through the bounce? Okay, so in Yaakov's struggle, the struggle really was to become himself, to embrace himself. And the difficulties, some of the difficulties he had were about growing into that, right? So many of the struggles, and we're not going to go, you know, into an in-depth study of Yaakov, not that I'm even qualified for that, but so many of the struggles were really about becoming who he needed to be rather than who he wished he would be. And that's really our goal here. These difficulties that we're facing are all lovingly offered to us and sometimes forced upon us so that we really can become who we need to be, but really become who we are, not necessarily who we wish. So a lot of the pain that we face is based in, I think I reversed these two slides, so I'll quickly go through, okay. It's really based in the distance between who we wish we were and who we actually are. So I tried to get a picture of distance here. That's what this is supposed to look like. I think it's actually two cones protecting a hole, but really it's supposed to look like a distance. So the distance, the pain that we feel in many of our difficulties with ourselves is the pain of the distance of who we wish we were with who we actually are. So think about that a little bit, and I'll just go personal again. You can make this for your own selves, but I have to say there were many years when I was very jealous of, let's say, Tehillah Yeager or other people like that, because I wished I was that. I wished I was born into a rabbinic family. I wished I was born at least into a frum family, at least into a Jewish family where I could have been raised as a Jew and taught Torah from my youth and just be raised in the what Tehillah used to call the honeypot, a family that was so rich and so sweet in Torah. Oops, that it was absorbed into her just by being raised in such a sweet pot of honey of Torah, like she was raised. So I was very jealous, and that's who I wish I was, And I spent a long time, a few years, really wasting quite a bit of energy in the stress of wishing I was that when I actually was me. And while I did recognize some of who I was, there was definitely a lot of, you can't even really call it regret, because it's not, but wistfulness of wishing who I was, wishing I could be something that I'm not. So let's talk about that for a minute. Wishing that you could be something that you're not yet. It is important to be able to wish ahead, but it's not worth it to wish behind. So that's where I want to differentiate here, that this is something to let go of. And you can let go of a whole source of pain here, the distance between who you wish you were and who you actually are. That's wishing back, right? Wishing behind you. I wish I was born into whatever. I wish we had more money. I wish I had more education. I wish I was more articulate. I wish I was thinner. I wish I was prettier. I wish I was whatever it is. That's what you wish you were. You have to take stock of who you actually are. Now let's look back to, which is really forward. This is a healthy wish. Who you are, recognizing who you are, and see the distance to who you wish to be. That's an okay wish to have, and actually an important wish to have, right? So there is a distance between who we are right now and who we'd like to be in the future. And we talked quite a bit about that, goals that we're setting, and we're going to talk about that more next week about really working, because I do, Blee Netter, want to have you with some kind of a document towards the end that you'll be able to hold on to and see some life balance areas and roles and goals that you're going to be working on. So this is an appropriate wish. Knowing where you are right now and knowing where you want to be and setting goals towards achieving that, that's great. You don't have to be in sadness or frustration that you're not there yet necessarily. You just have to set the goals and start walking towards that direction. But it doesn't pay at all to wish backwards, that you wish you would have been born into a different family, to different parents, have different siblings, etc., etc., etc. It's only productive to have the wishes be something that you can actually influence, and then to take stock of who you actually are and move forward with that. Let's talk about that. So let's start with this. We talked about being Swiss cheese people in two classes ago, that we have holes by design. So that's internal holes. We have flaws. We have missing pieces. So that it's really an invitation for us to grow into who we can be. Women are privileged to say a bracha that men don't get to say. They get to say, Asani Kirtzano, thank you Hashem for creating me according to your will. Men have to only bless in the negative, thank you for not making me a Gentile, thank you for not making me a slave, thank you for not making me female. But we get to say thank you, two thank you nots, and one thank you yes, thank you for yes, making me who you wanted me to be. Nevertheless, whatever the bracha is, I mean, you could have, if you're female, you can have kavana when you say that bracha to think about this. And if you're male, you can just know that there's a female who can have kavana for you. But all of us can celebrate for a moment who we are. And I think it's really important. Celebrate who we are with our missing pieces. Celebrate who we are with our difficulties. Celebrate who we are with the holes in our lives that we have. But it's really important to say, Hashem made me this way, and I appreciate being this way. And I am thankful for being created just like this, whether I'm a quadriplegic, whether I have a diagnosis, whether I have surgery ahead of me, whether I have finances that I have to work on, whether I have to figure out a new job, I am thankful to be who I am today. Whether I have a husband who's questioning everything, whether I have a dog who's aging, whatever it is, I'm thankful to be who I am right now. And you can celebrate the moment of being thankful for you right now. Okay, I want to answer this question. Okay, so here's a question. I would like to align my wishes of who I want to be with what Hashem wants me to be. How do I do it? How do I discover my mission? That's an excellent question. And that really does take some introspection. We don't have nevuah today. I tease my husband when he calls me to ask what's for dinner. I say, what do you think I am, a Navi? I know everything. So we don't have an Navi that we can go to that will help us align that exactly. But we do have close friends and guides and mentors and partners and people in life who can help us with that. So we want to align ourselves. So let me just tell you the big secret that everybody thinks they have to cure cancer, write the book, become a global organizer, solve major problems. Actually, what you have to do is be the best you. The best you might include curing cancer, becoming a global organizer, writing books. But really the task is for every single person to be the best you that you can be. So it really does require self-knowledge. Who are you? What are you drawn to? What are you repelled from? What do you need to work with? So certainly Torah and mitzvos are not an end goal, but are a prerequisite to becoming who you need to be. So you have to make sure that you're doing well in the Torah and mitzvah zones in your life, and then move forward into what can you accomplish with this. It really does take some thinking, and it's different for different stages. And whether if you have a mentor or somebody that you can talk to, or a close friend, it's important. I've spoken to quite a few women who are doing things at different stages. And it really does take, so I'll just give you a few examples. Let's say you have a pack of young children. It's not your job right this very minute to become the global organizer. It's your job to raise those young children. Now, let's say I was speaking to somebody, you know, I do this Rebbetzin coaching all across the country. So I was speaking to a young Rebbetzin, a 30-something Rebbetzin, in a what we call an out-of-town city, who is running a school. And she has a very nice-sized family. And she could, she's mid-30s, she could have another child or two, or three if she wanted to. But she knows she couldn't run the school and have another child. And it's a real, she's really torn about it. The school, the city, and the Jews of the city need that school. And she understands that she's giving up having another child in order to be able to run that school. Now that's something that she needs to really think about. Is that a worthwhile husband? She does have, is that a worthwhile trade-off to make? And it's a halacha question and a hashkafic question, and definitely needs guidance. But it is something to think about. When in your life do you say, I'm holding pretty well on this stage and now can add on something else? The adding on something else is costing me in certain places, but this is what I can contribute to Klal Yisrael. And so can I contribute children to Klal Yisrael? It's really, all these things have to be thought about first of all, by oneself, and then in conjunction with one's partner, and then in conjunction with a mentor, somebody who can see you from outside. So it is important to, you have to have your own, start with yourself, your own self-knowledge. What are you drawn to? What would you like to accomplish? And then get somebody with some outside eyes to help you think it through and make sure that you are in alignment. That is the process that we use to make sure that what we're doing is in alignment with Hashem. And then you have to listen. Because sometimes Hashem talks to us, and He talks to us through our bodies as well. So let's just say, making up a scenario, let's say somebody was running a big community organization and their family, and they started to have a mental breakdown, right? They started to realize that they can't swing it. They're always stressed. They're not remembering things. Supper's not on the table, and their husband's getting fetchy, and the kids are whatever it is. And that's Hashem talking to them, and they have to hear that message. Time to pull back. So it is, Hashem does speak to us today. Sometimes, I mean, we could be Hasidish about it, sometimes in the voices of other people. You know, there's the story of the Rebbe who's sitting with his Hasidim around the table, and the local handyman comes and knocks on the door and says, he opens the door and says, Rebbe, do you need anything fixed today? And the Rebbe says, no, I think everything's fine. But the handyman needs some business. So he says to the Rebbe, Rebbe, please think hard. Surely something needs to be fixed. So the Rebbe says, Gevalt, do you hear that, Hasidim? Something needs to be fixed. We need to hear this voice. So that's a Hasidish way to think about hearing Hashem's voice. But Hashem does speak to us sometimes in ways like that. Whether it's a line in a song that keeps going through our head, or whether it's what a friend says to us, or sometimes just hearing a conversation or hearing two people talk about something, or an article that pops up. Somebody sends you an article and it happens to be just what you're thinking about. There are times when Hashem speaks to us in ways like that, and we should pay attention. Let's see. We'll move on from here. Okay, we do want to celebrate who we are. And let me make sure I... Yeah, good. And the concept of Brit Milah is the concept of we're born into the world to change. This is a picture of changing, right? It's the remote control, and it's up to us to make a change. So we should celebrate who we are and appreciate that Hashem made us just like this. And we have to know that the control is in our hands to make changes moving forward. And we're here to make changes. We are not here to be complacent. We're not here to just appreciate the good parts that we have and celebrate them and stick with them and think that we don't have to do much to move forward. No, we do. Whatever we have, it's our job to move forward and forward and forward again. And that is the concept of having a Brit Milah, is to say you're born into this world just the way Hashem wanted you to be. And it's your job to make a change, right? Learn it right away, 8 days old. The community will surround you and help you effect that change. You don't have to do it on your own. You're a member of a big tribe, but you are required to make changes in your life. So I think it's important to think about that dynamic between individual and community and how we work together, relying on others and working on ourselves. It is our goal to make changes in our lives and to exit the world differently than how we entered it. Let me just pause here for a minute and see if anybody has more questions or thoughts that they want to add in. Okay, I don't see anything coming in right now, but you're certainly welcome to write in. So what I want to emphasize here is how important the challenges can be and how we can actually embrace them. So by embracing, it doesn't mean that we don't want to change them, but it's a dual posture that we hold inside ourselves. So one posture is, thank you, Hashem, for giving me this difficult thing. And the other is, please, Hashem, help me be strong enough to change and insightful enough to change this difficult thing. So let's just take the example of an older single, right? Thank you, Hashem, for making me single today. Please, Hashem, help me meet my bashir tomorrow, right? Or later this afternoon, right? Somebody who's waiting for fertility. Thank you, Hashem, for letting me have this test of infertility right this very minute. And please, Hashem, make me fertile as soon as possible, right? That it has to be a dual thing. So we don't just sit with, let's just say, infertility. We don't just sit with that. We do go seek help. At some point, we do sit with it. It happens to be a challenge, a difference between Israel and America in terms of infertility, since Israel values fertility so much and really has a Jewish perspective on it. Fertility assistance is part of the health care in Israel and is free financially, unlike in America. But it's not free emotionally. And people who maybe would quit in America after a few attempts because they ran out of money, and the money really makes it so that they can almost relax in the quitting because they don't have much of a choice. In Israel, you keep trying and trying and trying. You could try for 20 years, and it could really take up 20 years of your life, it can be a real challenge. So there is a time to stop, and that needs, and I'm not saying with fertility, I'm just giving that as an example. It has to do with everything. There is a time to stop an effort if it's not paying off and work on other things, and there is a time to work towards change. So, and that requires guidance too. You know, when do you work towards that change, and when do you accept what you have? So there should really always be the acceptance of what you have. And then the question is, do you proactively work towards changing it or not? I was just looking at some reviews. Okay. I was just looking at some reviews of Rabbi Kirzner's book on dealing with suffering. I ordered it today. And he really feels strongly. He apparently wrote his book in opposition to Rabbi Kirzner wrote it in opposition to Rabbi Tlushkin's book, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? So I didn't read Rabbi Tlushkin's book. I'm just talking from the reviews, but apparently his thesis is that it's random. You just don't know. Things happen in the world and you just have to struggle with the consequences of bad stuff. And Rabbi Kirzner, who suffered from cancer and died from it in the end, died from the treatments in the end, Rabbi Kirzner wanted to say, absolutely not random. Absolutely given to you by God. And we have to figure out how to deal with that. Why do we suffer? And what is the bracha in the suffering? Yes, thank you, Kushner. Whoever wrote that, yes, thank you. It was Rabbi Kushner who wrote, I'm pretty sure, who wrote Right About Things Happen to Good People, and Rabbi Kirzner who wrote, I think it's called Making Sense Out of Suffering. Thank you. Right, so, but these are the two concepts that there are there. Look, if you believe in randomness, then you're just a reed in the wind, completely out of control, completely incapable of dealing with it, and you just have to take whatever weather is being slammed into you. But if you are in Hashem's hands, b'yadoaf kidruchi, if I'll put myself into Hashem's hand, that's the end of Adon Olam, I will place myself in Hashem's hand, so to speak, then you know that even if it's painful, even if it's difficult, it's not random. It's lovingly given, and it's just your job to figure out how to deal with it. Your job to figure it out emotionally and physically, how to deal with it. I don't remember if I told this story in this class or not, but it bears repeating anyway, just in terms of free will. So Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, is really, Viktor Frankl was a psychiatrist during the Second World War, and he, of course, like other Jews where he was first denied his university position as a professor, so that was taken away from him, and then his practice, and then his home, and then he was split from his wife, and then he was placed on a train, chased out of his city, headed towards a camp. Now, he didn't yet know what was going to happen in the camp that he was being sent to. Everything was taken away from him, suitcases, possessions, his wife, his position, everything. But he still had on his clothing what he was wearing, and in his jacket pocket was the manuscript for the book that he was working on at the time. When he arrived at the camp, everybody who was on the train was told to disrobe, leave their clothes in a pile, and they'd be given prison clothing to wear. He still didn't fully know what was happening, so he did disrobe, and he left his clothes in a pile, but he took his manuscript with him over to a prison guard and said, would it be all right if I keep this? Remember, there's no computers. He couldn't have emailed it to himself. I mean, that's his book. So he's thinking, okay, a hard time is in front of me, but when I get out, I'm going to finish this book and publish it, and I want to keep my manuscript. It's valuable to me. So the guard looked at him and said, where you're going, you're not going to need that. So fortunately, he didn't go to a gas chamber. He did make it through the war. However, at that moment, when his manuscript was taken away from him and he stood there naked, waiting, knowing that the intention was to kill most of them, he was waiting like a cow going to slaughter, he started to use his psychiatrist mind and think, what makes me different right now from a cow that's waiting for slaughter? And he realized that what makes him different in that moment is free will. He doesn't get to pick where he is, and he doesn't get to pick what they're going to do to him, but he does get to pick how he'll feel about it. That's his choice. And he realized that, and that was the beginning of the development of his whole course of treatment called logotherapy, understanding that people do have, they seek meaning, they need meaning, and they have to create that in their lives, and how to work with therapy. And he realized going through the war that the ones who survived, the ones who were more likely to survive, were not the physically strong men, but the psychically strong men. So the big bovine men with the muscles and the strength and the height and the extra weight, if they didn't have the ability to use their minds well, they didn't make it as well as the, let's say, somebody like Viktor Frankl, a skinnier guy who had a good brain. What he was able to do, and this is very, I think, an important technique, whether one is, we should never know from it or need to know from it, going through chemotherapy or whatever, going through something difficult, here's a technique to use. Viktor Frankl was able to use his mind to take a vacation. So even in the coldest Marches, he was able to imagine, close his eyes and imagine his wife and her warm smile, and imagine a warm home and candles and feeling connected. And he was able to give himself a little break from the searing cold and pain that his body was experiencing by creating a vivid picture of what he was hoping for, what gave him meaning, what he wished for. Now, one thing that he noticed after the war is that those who lived on hope actually made it through, and some were destroyed after the war. Because those who really built a whole world of hope that got them through, and then they went back to their villages and found that their whole family had been destroyed and their home was taken over by the local Gentiles, and there was no hope for them to ever return to what they had, that at that point they lost all hope, and some died from that. So he showed how important our minds are, that we do have free will to develop hope or to create the ability to get through something very difficult with our brains. I'm sure it bears further study, but to be so hooked into a particular picture of hope that will be destroyed if that's not accomplished. Okay, that being said, we do have to finish on time today. So here is what I want you to leave behind, right? Leave behind who you wish you were and move towards who you can become. But it's really going to take some time. Think about shedding leaves like a tree. You can't do it all at once. It's one by one, layer by layer. You really do have to think, who am I wishing I was? Right? And now I'm at whatever age I am, clearly I'm not going to accomplish some of the things that I thought I might. Clearly I'm not going to become some of the things that I thought I might become. Whatever age you are, that can be apparent at this point. And let go of some of those things. Decide what you still want to accomplish and put that ahead of you. But leave behind those things that it's not going to happen for you. Right? You're not going to become whatever it was, the singing star or the whatever it is. You could fill in all the blanks for your own self, but leave that behind and stop regretting it, and now move ahead to who you actually can be. That, I think, that will help with a lot of the difficulties. I mean, it softens them. It's still difficult, but if you're still clinging to, I wish I was a totally healthy person and I never had any health scares. Okay, that's a lovely wish, but it's not the reality. And it's time to move into who we are. I am this age with these eyes, these lungs, these feet, and whatever they do for me or don't do for me, I'll appreciate the parts that I have. It's actually, Shimon Schwab teaches us an important concept, to be sameach v'chelko, to be happy with what? Our chelek. A chelek means our part, happy with our lot, but it means a part. You only ever have part of what you want. Be happy with that part. And he said that as he sat in a wheelchair with his legs not working towards the end of his life. He said, I'm happy for the parts of me that work. That's sameach b'chelki, to be happy with what I do have. It's only part. It's not the whole thing. But I'm working on being happy with the parts that I have. So if we can, much deeper than looking at a glass half empty or half full, but to really appreciate what we have, move forward, and realize that we always have the opportunity to choose what we want and move towards that. We can't make unrealistic choices, but there's plenty within our realistic choice zone that we can choose to move towards. Okay, I do have to end on time. So here is your homework for this week. Love, peace, and joy. Really embrace yourself. Appreciate who you are and who you can be, leaving behind the sadness of what you wish, leaving behind the anger for the difficulties that you're in, embracing the difficulties that you're in, appreciating them, asking Hashem for help to deal with them, and then moving towards what you can accomplish. Move towards the new you that awaits you on the other side of the difficulty, and the evolving you that can help bring you through that difficulty. And I guess we'll close here for the week. And next week, we're going to talk about connecting to Hashem. And in the final week, hopefully we'll bring it all together in a document. So please work on some of the other things that we've spoken about in the last few weeks. And we'll be in touch. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you.